There's a gigantic monkey climbing that bastard, right? Just this huge King Kong-y dude. Not even a real King Kong, more like a chimpanzee, but like King Kong size. And he's climbing up that monkey. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Bad Voltage. This is episode 15. Hey, guys, can I ask you a question real quick? This is episode 15, yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm not just hallucinating the past 14 episodes. This is episode 15.
I think you've only been hallucinating 10 of the last 15 episodes, right?
At least. Well, I've missed at least 10 of the last 15, right? So I figure I've got to be hallucinating those. Anyway, what I'm wondering right off the bat, and I bet Jono is the guy to answer this question, what the hell are we talking about today? Because I don't have a clue.
Right. Well, you ask a very good question, Brian. In fact, Brian, you yourself gave a pretty fantastic talk at Linux Fest Northwest called Linux Sucks. But unfortunately, it was full of bollocks, and I'm going to tell you why.
Yes, one of the very obvious things from that talk is that Brian loves Elementary, the Elementary operating system, with a love which is unholy and entirely unjustified. So, I think we should talk about Elementary.
In effect, Brian likes Elementary so much that not only are we going to talk about Elementary for an entire segment, we are then going to interview the founder of Elementary, Daniel Foray.
And then, running on the themes of things that Brian talks about or does, I'm going to review an Xbox One.
And I'm just going to add that it gets creepy. The review gets very creepy.
It does, doesn't it? It gets a little creepy.
The things your Xbox has seen, no one should see.
And then finally, we're going to get into community summary. We're going to be talking about some Bad Voltage mobile apps and stuff that's going on the forums and all other kinds of good stuff. So, Mr. Garcia, what shall we do?
You know what we should do? I think we should start Bad Voltage.
Every year, there are a number of Linux conferences that happen around the world, and there's a bunch of them in the US, and one of them is Linux Fest Northwest.
Yeah, baby.
And Brian, big fan. Some of you eagle-eared listeners, if that's a thing, will have heard Brian talking about this in the last show. And Brian does a talk there every year called Linux Sucks. Now, Brian, give us a quick overview of what you talk about in that presentation.
I tell everyone that Linux sucks, and then everyone in the audience agrees with me.
Right. Okay. That's
okay.
Bullshit.
Okay. The general gist of it is we have a bunch of people at a Linux festival, Linux loving folk, and we all get together in one big room, rant about the things that are pissing us off the most in the Linux world at that point in time amongst friends, and then leave feeling cleansed and ready to go about our lives.
And I should point out real quick for those of you who haven't seen the talk, it is available on Brian's YouTube. And the first thing you will immediately notice when you watch it is every time he asked for people to raise their hands to prove a point, he got either zero or nearly no hands at all.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that every time you look for audience participation, it always backfires.
All right, moving on, since I got no hands to prove my point.
You see this, like Unity, you all hate Unity, don't you? Put your hands up if you hate Unity. Nobody.
I was actually really surprised at that. So last year, I do this thing every year. Last year, I asked something kind of similar. The whole room practically jumped to their feet and was unanimous in, oh my God, we hate Unity. This year, there was like three guys sitting in the back that kind of wimpily raised their hands. They're like, yeah, I don't really like Unity. Everyone else kind of had this bewildered look on their face. Like, what are you talking about? Unity is the bee's knees, dude. So it's amazing to me how dramatically people's impression of Unity has changed in just the last year. That's kind of amazing.
You'd almost think that spending 12 months further developing a piece of software makes it better.
You know, and I think,
although I was surprised that only half the people running Ubuntu were running Unity. I would have thought
it was really only about half. And most people running Ubuntu seemed to be running KDE, it seemed like. Either KDE or they were running LXDE on Ubuntu seemed to be the common one when I'd asked people. But it was amazing. I mean, whether it's that they've gotten more time to get used to it or Unity's just gotten that much better, and it really has improved a lot over the last year. It's amazing.
So if I understand you correctly, Canonical's not forcing Unity on everybody then? Interesting.
Did you watch the whole thing, my man?
So speaking of which, let's get into this, right? Because I watched. I was bored and lonely and crying one evening, and I consoled myself by making myself feel better about myself. So I watched Brian Lundick speaking, and the talk is basically divided into two pieces. Right, the first half is Brian going through his different bits of what sucks about Linux, and then the second bit is kind of providing the other side of the story as well. And you know, it's actually. It doesn't really suck as much as it made out in the first part, right?
Right.
So I was watching it, and you said right at the beginning, I think, you know, for those of you watching this on YouTube, like, please watch the whole video before leaving a comment, because you obviously know about the second half of the presentation. I watched it all, but I have to say, much as you clarified a lot of the pieces towards the end of it, the bullshit was strong in this one.
Lay it on me, man. What do you think and was bullshit?
I want to go through this and share the reason why I think the bullshit is strong. So first of all, I have a couple of reasons why. First of all, you use DistroWatch as a source of trend data.
Okay. Now,
do I have to say anything else in this?
I made fun of myself for using DistroWatch during the presentation. So you're just using my own material against me, my man.
Right. I don't want to disappoint you here, pal, but you don't get sincerity points for going, this data I'm using sucks, while showing the data. What you have to do is not draw any conclusions
Here's the problem.
And mention it.
Here's the problem we've got. So really, there's only, in my opinion, there's only really two ways to grab data on Linux distributions. You either go to Linux Questions and check their stats, or you go over to DistroWatch and check their stats. The thing is, for the distros I wanted to check with, DistroWatch has all of them, and Linux Questions didn't have all of them available for download.
But hang a second, right?
I will say, don't go to Linux Questions for that particular thing, looking for that
There's no good way to get that stat,
I will concede.
There's no way to good way to get this stat. So really, all that I tried to pull together was trends over time of a subset of the Linux users' interest in given distros. And even it's a bit iffy. At best.
So the reason why DistroWatch is a bad source of data is for two reasons. One is that it's just not a very good source of data. And number two is that the audience
are
using
DistroWatch. A very compelling argument.
like web page accesses is not a good way of sourcing usage.
And it's a very self-selecting group of people that are
going to be. And then the second reason is that it's a self-selecting group of people. It's fundamentally a group of people who like distro hopping.
It is.
So therefore, most people who are going to go to DistroWatch are going to be interested in trying things, you know, lesser known distributions or more niche distributions for whatever reason. Yep. So, you know, that's point number one.
Yes.
Point number two, leading on from that, is that all of your content in that presentation was anchored around the needs of a Linux enthusiast, right? And I think I've come to the conclusion over the years that there's kind of two groups of people involved in Linux. One are people who just want distros for them. Like, I'm not interested in world domination. I just want distro that serves my needs, right? We, you know, Elementary is a great example of that, right? They do a good job. They're probably never going to be a huge, like, world dominating operating system, but they satisfy their users, and that's great, right? The second group of people are people who want Linux to be accessible to everybody in this big, huge thing, right?
Right.
I put myself in the second group, and I think that your talk was geared towards the first group.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, so, in Brian's defense, if you're doing a talk at a convention called Linux Fest Northwest, it's not unreasonable to suppose that the audience is primarily composed of Linux fans.
No,
Linux
absolutely. And here's the general thing. It's not a talk about Ubuntu sucks. And while I did make a lot of fun of Ubuntu, it's not a talk about Ubuntu. It's a talk about Linux in general and about the whole Linux ecosystem, not just one specific focus at attempting to attain world domination, because that's not really what I was interested in.
But the thing is, though, is that I agree that you're naturally going to cater to the audience, which is Linux enthusiasts who are going to be at LinuxFest Northwest.
In part because that's me. I'm not a world domination Ubuntu-y kind of guy. I've got, let's see, and this machine's OpenSUSE, that over there is Android. I've got a machine over there that barely runs Fedora. I'm not an Ubuntu-y kind of guy.
But the thing is, this kind of leads on to my third point, which was, I know you said you were kind of like ragging on Ubuntu a bit, but I would say that it went a bit beyond ragging. I think it was picking on Ubuntu repeatedly. And what was interesting to me about that was, this is the reason why I make distinguish between the two audiences, because in my mind, obviously I'm hugely biased because I work on Ubuntu, but Ubuntu is the best option today, as far as I'm concerned, for trying to get desktop, client, cloud, world domination, right? I think Red Hat's doing an awesome job on the server side as well, obviously. But I think that in terms of the, particularly on the desktop, in terms of making a distro easy to use and accessible to the general public, I think Ubuntu's making some important and some difficult decisions in that regard. And where I thought your talk was interesting was, my view has always been, you know what? Live and let live, because there's going to be some distros that are going to make difficult decisions, or they're going to make, in my mind, silly decisions, but they're targeting a different audience, right? And what I thought was interesting about your presentation was that throughout the entire time, there's one continuous mocking stream of content about Ubuntu.
Yeah, baby. Whereas it was good, right?
I don't think you put it in context. I think if you'd have said, look, Ubuntu are out there targeting a demographic that I'm not really interested in myself, then that's fine. But it was kind of presented as like Ubuntu was letting the side down. And that's what I thought was kind of unfair when I watched it. I know you kind of clarified some pieces in the second half of it, but it just felt to me like you were holding Ubuntu to a completely different standard than you were holding.
Well, I think he was just as tough on Fedora, though.
Oh, dude, yeah. Over the years,
I don't think he singled out Canonical more than he did Fedora. That one Fedora guy in the crowd's clear contention there.
No, Jeremy, I think Jono's right. I singled out Canonical very specifically, far more than I did on Fedora in this particular one. But as a general rule, on these Linux sucks presentations that I've given over the years, I've been way harder on Fedora. I have given Fedora a hell of a hard time over the years. And at this point, it's gotten to the point where it's almost expected. And so honestly, it was a little weird that this year I would get, it was a little harder on Ubuntu than I was on Fedora.
But my objection isn't the fact that it was being hard on Ubuntu. My objection was being hard on anyone for doing something that's different. Like, that's the objection I have. Because my view, and not everyone shares this view, but I've always been of the view that everything in open source, we're all part of the same side. So when I see people bickering between projects, it really annoys me, because from my view, it just... we look like, you know, a bunch of dogs trying to chase after the same bone. And in reality, it doesn't help the movement forward. And that's the reason why I don't like ragging on Fedora or ragging on OpenSUSE. Sure. I mean, there's friendly jibing, but for me, even within a satirical presentation, to kind of rag on a single distro that much, I'd have the same views about if you ragged on Elementary or ragged on Fedora.
Two quick little anecdotes while I will show you why you are so profoundly wrong. The first is, if you are in New York City and you look up at the Empire State Building and there is a gigantic monkey climbing that bastard, right? Just this huge King Kong-y dude. Not even a real King Kong, more like a chimpanzee, but like King Kong size. And he's climbing up that monkey and you're standing down on the ground and you see this gigantic monkey up there. Two things are going to come into your mind. One, this could be a problem. There's a giant monkey climbing a building. And two, how awesome is it that the monkey is climbing a building? You're going to be a little worried that the monkey's either going to defecate and drop on your head or fall on you or something like that. So you're going to complain about it. You're going to whine a little bit because there's an 800-pound gorilla climbing a building. But on the same token, you kind of want that gorilla to climb that building, get to the top, and smash a few airplanes because it's awesome. When you look at Canonical is an 800-pound gorilla in the Linux ease of usability world. They've been pushing forward and they've seen a huge amount of success. When we look at Canonical, we want to point at that gorilla and say, that's awesome. And I'm going to make fun of it a little bit because it's a crazy gorilla climbing a building. Second thing, we're all a bit of a family here. Family loves each other and family makes fun of each other. The moment you don't feel comfortable making fun of each other, you're not friends and family anymore. At that point, you're weird acquaintances inside of an office building where you're kind of afraid of a sexual harassment lawsuit.
No, I agree. That's but the thing is, that's the thing. I think the way I interpreted it is that, look, I've seen a lot of people talk a lot of shit about Ubuntu, and I get it because like people don't necessarily want us to do that, or people don't want Linux to head in the particular direction that Ubuntu wants to go in, or whatever it might be, right? More than happy for people to have different viewpoints and different perspectives. I think the thing that I found a little frustrating is that I felt like you were holding the same criticisms that you have towards Canonical, you do not have towards other projects. I'll give you an example.
That's totally true.
You mentioned in your presentation, you were talking about Cinnamon and how they forked GNOME.
Yeah.
Because they needed to, and the end result was good, right? It's exactly what we did with Unity. We basically went on our own direction.
You were picking and choosing what you were listening to. At the beginning of the thing, I gave the Cinnamon guys a really hard time, and I did the same thing last year because they forked it. Now, and in the end of it, in the Not Sucks thing, I kind of laid into both Cinnamon and Canonical, both the Mint guys and Canonical, for doing a great job of kind of going their own road. And honestly, I think both of what they're doing is awesome. I think it's also a bit of a problem, but I think it's awesome and I wouldn't want to change it. That's just kind of how
I
feel.
Describe it that way. I describe it that I think that from your perspective, and there's nothing wrong with this perspective, is that changing and innovating and changing the norm, if you're a upstream project that's not got a company attached to it, is okay. Whereas if you have a company attached to a project, I think that you don't think that's okay. And what I'm saying is that this is the reason why I think it's always important that we have distros that serve like the audience of enthusiasts, but we also can respect those distros that are trying to serve a different market. And I'd have this view, like I said, I used to have this view with when before I joined Canonical, when we were doing Lug Radio, is that I think we have to accept the fact that there are different audiences with and different distros with different goals, right? And I think that's the thing that got me was, look, you know, is Canonical perfect? Absolutely not. Is Ubuntu perfect? Absolutely not. But I think that the steps that have been, I don't think that the steps that we've made to kind of improve the platform, I don't believe that they've not had good intentions at heart, is what I'm saying.
I think your view of what Brian's saying, Jono, is correct. But I think the thing you're characterizing with is wrong. It's not about whether there's a company or not. You're allowed to fork and do these different things and try all sorts of different approaches as long as you don't get too successful. Because if you get too successful, then the tail starts wagging the dog a bit. Yeah. So I would say is what Brian thinks. I think that's a wrong thing to think. I suspect Brian thinks it's a perfectly right thing to think.
Brian's weird like that. I just want to point out one thing, just in looking at agreement or disagreement, according to the YouTube, which YouTube thumbs up and thumbs down is almost as good as DistroWatch's statistics. Presently, YouTube has given, 1,172 as of this recording thumbs up to 40 thumbs down. So I would like to say that everyone on YouTube, the harshest critics and the people that simply call me faggot and whatnot as much as they can, agrees with me on these points far more than they do with Jono on these points.
And, you know, if you want to use, you know, completely non-scientific bullshit data,
and
like that,
I absolutely
I
do is the thing. I love non-scientific data.
I tell you what, though, wrapping things up a little, because I know we're kind of running a little bit late. I have to say, right, much as I've been ragging on you about your completely inaccurate invective fill presentation,
because we're friends and family, and that's what people
I have to say,
do.
Brian. I have to say, you're an excellent, excellent speaker, and it was a really entertaining talk. I mean, much as I think that it was inaccurate in places, and I think it was unhealthy. I think that what you were doing, I thought the content of going out and doing a presentation that's called Linux Sucks, it's satirical, right? And it's hard to get that kind of satire. It can be lost on a lot of people. And while it didn't hit the mark all the times, I think it hit the mark most of the time, and the audience clearly liked it. So I just want to say kudos for the presentation, but next time, right, pick on someone your own size.
You know what? I guarantee you I'll do this one next year. Why don't we have maybe a pre-record follow-up, kind of like how like the opposite party does a response to the State of the Union from the president. I'll let Jono give the response from Canonical. We'll do a little pre-can thing. How's that?
Let's do it.
Last few months, I have been using a Chromecast for TV watching, and outside of a few minor complaints, it has worked astoundingly well. Both my wife and I have had Android tablets that we could use to queue up Netflix, Hulu, and the like to watch damn near anything we can dream up. My wife's tablet, a first-generation Nexus 7, died a horrible screen-cracking death while I was away at a conference, leaving her unable to watch TV while I was away. So my wife did what any sensible person would do in that situation. She went out and bought a new tablet. This time, she picked up a Samsung 8-inch tablet. Long story short, she hated it. She hated it so much that she took it back to the store and exchanged it for something else she could watch TV with, an Xbox One. Now, I wasn't exactly in the market for an Xbox One, but being the good, gadget-loving nerd that I am, I wasn't about to object. I'm not going to talk about the graphical performance of this system. I played a few games, they looked amazing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Let's move on. I want to talk about the Kinect functionality, because that stuff is crazy. To start with, it recognizes you when you walk into the room, and it says, hi. Sometimes it can be a bit creepy, like when I walked out of the shower and into my bedroom. The Xbox is in our bedroom. Wearing nothing but a towel, and the Xbox greeted me with a big, hi, Brian, complete with an exclamation point at the end, which means it was really excited to see me. So, the voice controls are also a bit zany. To begin telling the Xbox what to do, you simply say Xbox and then start talking, which works great except for when you use the word Xbox in a sentence that wasn't intended for the Xbox to hear. It starts listening, and shenanigans ensue because it tries to figure out what you were saying. Oh, and it seems to know who's talking. If I say Xbox, it knows it's me and not my wife, even if she's sitting right next to me. We tested this out by having her mouth the word Xbox when I said Xbox, and it still knew it was me. All of this adds up to a big heaping helping of creepiness. Cool tech, to be sure, but creepy as all get out. But really, it does things quite well. Gaming performance is superb, the controller is excellent, and the watching TV-specific functionality is great as well. Hulu, Netflix, YouTube, etc. all work like a charm. I even get achievements for watching TV, which makes me feel much better about being lazy. I just wish it would stop talking to me when I'm naked. The bad voltage verdict? Awesome. Definitely better than Jono's stupid PS4.
Okay, so I'm pretty pleased that you actually dug into the, not just the gaming piece of this, because we've seen a lot of reviews on the internet about the gaming performance of the Xbox.
It's great. One. You know, the PS4, Xbox, they both play games great. They all look great. I figure it's the other stuff that it's interesting, right?
That's more interesting, yeah. What, just, can you describe the sound of an Xbox throwing up in its mouth when it saw you naked?
Man, it was silent about it, but I'm sure that the server farms in Redmond had a real freak out.
Well, yeah, but when it took those pictures and uploaded them all to Microsoft, I'm sure that was fine.
So, but one question I do have about this, I've seen like a lot of like persnickety people on the internet who joke about how the Xbox One is more of a cable box than the games console. These are usually hardcore gaming nerds who like have PS4.
Yeah.
And kind of they speak about Xbox in a kind of a derogatory, well, you don't really need that kind of stuff. Like, how useful is it? I mean, you know, is it better than using a remote control, for example? I mean, putting the creepiness to the side, like,
here's the thing.
Does it make using the Xbox better?
It kind of feels like Microsoft just took a giant bowl full of wet sticky noodles, and each noodle represented a different complete user interface for doing stuff, and just threw them all against a wall and just saw what sticked. Because you can use your voice, you can use the normal Xbox controller, you can buy the little remote control that's normal remote control,
right.
Or you can literally just raise your right hand as if you're about to take an oath, and it'll go, oh, you've got your hand up, and a little hand appears on the TV, and you can just start moving it around as if it were a mouse cursor.
Right.
And then you can control it with your body. You can do these gestures. it's just like there's a million different ways to do everything, which is both off-putting and weird, but also simultaneously like kind of cool. It feels like the entire system is one big giant user interface experiment that is 90% crazy and gone awry, but 10% really cool.
Gotcha, gotcha. And I mean, we got to talk about the games for a little bit. I mean, what do you think about the games?
The games are fine. I mean, the games are fine in the way that the PS4 games are fine. You know, it's early days of the console, yeah. Right? Like, you got the PS4 when it first came out. Not a whole lot of games available, but some pretty good ones. You pick them up, you probably play one or two of them the most, right? Same thing with the Xbox One. There's not a ton of games available. You know, you've got the Titanfalls and whatnot, but really, most of the really big smash hits are probably not even going to come out for another, you know, 3 to 6 months. So the games are fine.
What I think is, I mean, I couldn't give a toss about the games, whatever. I've heard the same accusations that it's basically a cable box that happens to play games rather than a gaming console which happens to do good TV. But you're one of the first people I've heard who doesn't really care about the games either and explicitly went to buy it as a box for TV, which you happen to be able to put a game in. But the accusation is that it's essentially jack of all trades and master of none. It's not as good at gaming as a PS4 because it's too busy trying to beat television. It's not as good at television as, say, a Roku box because it's too busy trying to play games. And all this poncing about skiing in the middle of your living room with Kinect. How are you finding its experience as a TV thing?
Oddly
since you
usable.
Went and got it, went and got it as a TV thing, why did you not get a Roku box, something dedicated to TV?
You know, honestly, because I found that the user experience for this is roughly on par with that of a Roku device, or truth be told, its user experience is better than using, say, the Chromecast, where you're kind of using a separate device to browse your content and cast it to your Chrome. The user experience is actually pretty cohesive and well, I hate the fact that I said the word cohesive, by the way. It's very tightly integrated. It feels like it was designed together and they really did a nice job of it. I'm not a huge fan of the Microsoft, let's make everything into little tiny tiles design ethos that they've adopted.
Metro thing.
It's not my thing, but to be fair, what they did with it, they did it well. So it's like, you know, you can really respect it for being beautiful for what it is. And honestly, it works great. Like the TV streaming quality is great. I've spent a lot of time with the Roku 3 and I really like the Roku 3. One thing I've noticed, the Xbox One when streaming Hulu tends to have a little better video quality than I noticed with the Roku 3. But the difference is minimal at best. And honestly, that might have just been my internet working better that day than the other day I tried it. It's really not bad.
I know, Brian, one thing I wanted to ask you about this is over the years, like you've talked, you know, a reasonable amount about like indie games and, you know, you've made some indie games.
Yeah.
Like the Xbox was once like a proud bastion of indie games. And then there was some incident with Fez and like, you know, it all went downhill. Have you looked into that side of things? Like, would you say it's good for indie games fans?
It's still better for indie games than say the PS4 side of things. And a lot of that is due to, you know, Microsoft pushing of XNA and basically making the developer tools a little more readily accessible to independent developers. I'm not a huge fan of it because again, you know, all my machines are either Android or Linux based. So I'm not going to sit down at my Windows 8 machine and start building out in XNA some Xbox game. So that kind of makes it a moot point for me. So I'm not going to start building games for it. But there are quite a few decent indie games for it. More than indie games, I've noticed that there's lots of companies that do social games getting into building these little tiny games for Xbox One, which I think they're kind of doing on the PS4 as well. And that's all right. I mean,
no Linux Tycoon coming out on Xbox One?
There's no Linux. Actually, that's a great idea, though. That would be a blast.
That would be comedy, by the way.
That would be good, right? I have no idea if anyone would actually buy it, but it's worth having just for the news reports. But it's a good system. Honestly, if someone came to me today and said, you know, would you buy this over a PS4? I don't know, probably, but only by a little bit, and only if you're more interested in the you know, the TV aspect
TV
of it.
TV side of things?
The gaming side of things, I'd say, is roughly equivalent. The Xbox has tighter integration with things like achievements and gamer scores and whatnot. They've done a little better job with the leaderboard type things than Sony has.
Right.
But Sony also does tend to have a, does do a really good job of attracting some of the games that Microsoft doesn't get. I don't know. It's kind of a wash on the gaming front, but I probably would lean to Xbox One.
It seems to me like in the scale of gaming, on one side you've got like PC, which is hardcore gamers.
Yeah.
And then on the opposite side, you've got the Wii. And then in between, it seems like the one next to the PC gaming is probably going to be PS4, and then the one next to the Wii is going to be Xbox One. It's kind of the way I would
I think that's how people are going with it. But honestly, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. I think that Xbox One is still a bit more of a hardcore gaming machine than the Wii is. So it's kind of a toss-up. If you're a hardcore gamer, you almost buy an Xbox One or a PS3 just for one specific game, you know?
Right, like Battlefield 4, for example.
Right. Or Titanfall.
Now I think we should talk about an up-and-coming Linux distribution / operating system that I will personally admit to having never, ever used or even seen, and that is Elementary OS. Now, this came up quite a bit in Brian's talk, which is where we kind of first heard about it quite a bit. And then doing a little bit of research, it seems like they have quite a few downloads. I think they're just over a million now. And so I don't know. Like I said, I've never used it. Brian, you have obviously used it. Ak and Jono, are you guys familiar with Elementary or no?
I've dipped into it. Like I've never used it kind of in anger. I've used it here and there, like I've downloaded like a version of it and tested it out, but just poking my nose around.
I love the image of Jono downloading and installing a distro, just furious about it. Just
like say, I know to our listeners, like, never use Linux in anger. Don't
just
do it.
Banging on the keyboard, destroying his machine. It's metal.
That's
man.
Not what that statement means.
You are metal.
Stupid Americans. Carry on.
Yes.
Ak, what about you?
I've run it in a VM. I'm not prepared to devote a whole machine to it yet, but I like the idea of what they're trying to do. So I have downloaded it, and I've tried to spend some time with it.
So for our listeners that aren't really familiar with it, it is a very design-driven operating system that is mostly, they want their own apps kind of, and their Vala-only apps. And I think GTK 3 only, correct?
Right.
Brian probably knows the most about it, if you want to give kind of a little bit of an overview there.
That's kind of the gist of it. I mean, it's to start with, something Ak said, you know, he's downloaded and put it in a VM. Just to throw this out there, because I'm the kind of guy who does the same thing. I have just like a billion VMs with a bunch of different distros. This is one of the distros that I kind of recommend doing on bare metal hardware. And I know that's hard to do for most of us. Honestly, it's really inconvenient for me as well. But the way it performs, it looks very silky smooth and beautiful on bare metal hardware, and then in VirtualBox or VMware or whatnot, it's the experience isn't as good. So if you want to really give it a chance, I suggest putting it on an actual machine.
I understand that, but
yeah,
It's possible. I mean, it's possible that I'm wrong about this, and I'd love to be corrected. But I bet you that the installer doesn't conveniently detect other things and help to resize them, except to the extent that it does because it's the Ubuntu installer.
Resize? You mean like visually?
Yeah, I mean, if you install Ubuntu, it detects other operating systems on the same disk, and it makes it easy to install something on the bare metal without buggering up your existing installation.
Actually, that much does fine. Yeah.
I'm sure Elementary will do that to the extent that it's the Ubuntu installer.
Right.
But I don't know how much Elementary design work they've put into making that convenient, which is kind of at the root of one of my things with it, really, that Ubuntu is simultaneously a competitor and the provider of 88% of Elementary. Right.
It's almost like the relationship between Ubuntu and Debian. Weird, right?
Yeah, it is. Oh, absolutely.
That story sounds familiar.
Yeah, totally.
Very, very similar. I mean, it's co-opetition, I believe, is the term.
It is, you know? It is. It's a dreadful term, but it is the term. But I mean,
it is an awful term.
One of my big objections to Elementary as a concept is that you install Elementary, and it looks beautiful. If you look at screenshots of it, it's gorgeous. You think, oh, wow. And I very much like the fact that it's design-led, and they're attempting to create a strong design ethos. And then you say, okay, and now I need an application to record my voice so I can participate in Bad Voltage. So I install Audacity, and it looks like shit. Because
I think you're in the minority of the users there, right? They're focused on a small number of apps because they use a custom version of Midori, I think, that fits in very nicely with the rest of the desktop. And I think they've focused on a very small number of apps. You certainly are not the average computer user, so but probably somewhere outside of their demographic.
Why I tried to pick something. My dad uses Audacity to essentially rip LPs. Right, so he's using the same application here. I didn't try and pick something which, if it was me, I'd have said, "Well, where the hell is Sublime Text and why doesn't it fit in?" Right,
but this is a complaint that you've leveraged towards not just Elementary though, to just in Linux in general, right?
Absolutely.
We should try and build apps that fit into the desktop. But let's be honest, it's not just on Linux, right? On other OSs, you see apps that don't fit into those desktops as well.
Not as much.
That's bullshit.
It's quite different.
Yeah, I'm with Jono. I want to disagree with Jono on everything today, and he's right about that. So,
Brian. Hey, shut up. Right? I'm not talking about operating systems which have been around for 20 years and have a whole bunch of legacy. It's possible, but much more difficult.
You mean like Linux?
An iOS app. Yeah, but Elementary.
How long do you think Linux has existed, dude?
Yeah, but equally, like Elementary are trying to do something different. If Elementary is just one more Linux distro, then it's exactly what they say it isn't, which is just another skin, right? And the whole point is, it isn't just Debian with a theme.
So I think one of the things I don't get about Elementary is, like, I love what they're trying to do here because I've always believed that Linux and open source should be available to the general public. I believe that I can't stand technical elitism, right? I think people who only want Linux and open source to be usable by technical people, I think it's so short-sighted. So any project that's trying to go after the general public, and I think, I don't 100% know that they're trying to do this, but I think that they've got broadly a similar kind of set of goals as Ubuntu does, like to be of interest to Linux enthusiasts, but also to the general public as well. I admire that focus and direction. But one of the things I've learned over the years is that achieving that and getting over that chasm, and we're still working on that in Ubuntu, involves so many things that are not typically the domain of open source projects. It's things like ISV relations and OEM relations and hardware certification and, you know, all that kind of building a comprehensive app developer platform. There's all of these different pieces that you got to have. And if I'm correct in my assumption of their goals, I just don't know how they're going to achieve that as just an open source project. So I fear that they'll have a pretty desktop, but they'll never go beyond that. And
well, I think they're much more focused on the desktop than Canonical. Doesn't seem to me, especially as of late, to be overly focused on the desktop. And I'm glad that someone is focusing on the Linux desktop because I think it is important. Yeah. But you guys are more about convergence and mobile and a whole bunch of other things that I frankly don't think they care about at all. That said, I think most people, and I wouldn't say this about Elementary, but I think that most people who aren't involved in running a Linux entity on a day-to-day basis woefully underestimate what is involved with truly getting a company to succeed.
I think this is the thing. I mean, if you have an incredibly popular platform, then someone decides, I'm going to build a new application, provide a new service, whatever, they'll bring it to your platform because it's popular. But at the beginning, what you need is an army of people who never get any credit and never get any public views going out there and talking to all the app people in order to make sure that your platform is viable. And that's really hard to do on a volunteer basis. Developing code, designing, putting together the human interface guidelines, helping people out with support.
Is so much stuff.
Is very, is perfectly doable with a volunteer project. Having someone who's going to chase down biz dev managers, 300 different app manufacturers to say, when are you going to bring your thing to our platform? Harder work, I think.
Yeah, and I think part of it for me is over the years, I've been involved now, I've been interested in Linux now for about 15 years, and over those years, I've seen tons of open source projects set up to attract a particular demographic that I think is important to target. Things like, do you remember Hulu, the calendaring solution back in the day? And things like Progeny and Corel Linux, like all of
Corel,
you know, Mandrake.
Yeah.
You know, Mandrake as well, back in the day. Like, I've seen so many of these, like, sometimes more formalized.
I was waiting for you to pull out a Lindo's reference there.
Right, no, not them. And a lot of them, unfortunately, don't go very far because they create good code that satisfies, like, something that someone like myself could download and install and run, But that is like, it's such a small part of the surface area that you've got to cover to be successful on a bigger scale. Now, this is all assuming that that's what they want to do, right?
I think you're trying to say how are they going to succeed in the vision of what Canonical considers success, and they might have a different definition of success.
I'm assuming that their goals...
So what we should do
is
we should talk to someone from elementary.
That sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, because you know what happens when you assume, don't you? You take a couple of asses and you put them inside of both of us.
I don't think that saying means what you think it means.
I heard it on TV. It's fine. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, so we've been talking about elementary, as you've heard, and a number of questions came out of that, and we thought it would be a useful opportunity to get someone from elementary onto the show, so we can address those questions to someone, and they can give us answers. And clearly the best person to have on is Daniel Foray, head of the Elementary Project. Hello, Daniel. Welcome to Bad Voltage.
How's it going?
Oh, not too bad.
Very, very good.
So a number of questions came up in our discussion, but it might be useful if you describe, first of all, in your own words, briefly, what the goal of the Elementary Project is.
The goal of Elementary has always been to provide the best possible desktop experience using open source software. In a nutshell.
Now, getting into that for a second, because one of the things that we were talking about was the overall goals of Elementary and how the potential of reaching those goals, right? When you say that you want it to be the best desktop for open source software, are you focusing on the Linux community? Are you focusing on like the wider market? Like, how big is your audience that you ultimately want to reach out to?
You know, honestly, I feel like we're not focusing on the Linux community because we tend to piss those guys off a lot. We're more focusing on mainstream users. Things like rampant customization and swapping out, you know, background parts aren't really our goals. It's more, you know, an operating system for the rest of us. We want to be able to do normal things, browse the web, watch Netflix, that kind of jazz.
No, that's fair. So one of the things that came up in the discussion was, assuming that you're going after that audience, but there are no, to a first approximation, elementary-based apps to go after that market with, which means that an ordinary person, we'll take my dad as an example, who's currently an Ubuntu user, he'll install Elementary, beautiful, gorgeous desktop. He'll appreciate the fact that it's design-led, that it's consistent, until he first starts an application to record his voice, for example. And then it won't fit in with his desktop. It won't have the same design-led kind of approach to everything. How are you hoping to resolve that?
If you're talking about third-party apps, then there actually are third-party apps. If you look at stuff like Birdie is a third-party Twitter client written for Elementary. If you look at stuff like there's a podcast app called Vocal that's in development. There's a tasks app called Agenda. I mean, there's several third-party apps. But really, you get asked the same question of Ubuntu. How does Ubuntu hope to get third-party developers to write apps specific to their desktop?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. What's interesting is, but the Elementary site, much like the Ubuntu site, specifically champions the fact that there are thousands upon thousands of applications. So clearly, at least part of the approach here is you'll say to people, look, there are thousands and thousands of apps, even though most of them don't fit with Elementary and you won't understand them and won't like them, right?
Yeah, I think we have to make a concession that the apps that are available right now in general for the free desktop are very high quality. That's just a reality that we have to deal with. But saying there are no apps isn't really going to help us get users and developers that are going to demand and build more apps.
So it feels to me a little bit like you're kind of playing both ends against the middle, that it would be better for the overall design health of the Elementary desktop and consistency to say we only have Elementary apps, even though there aren't that many. But it's better for PR, essentially, and getting people into the desktop in the first place to say there are thousands of apps. But both of those have quite big downsides. And short of severely ramping up your application developer program, how do you propose to deal with that?
So, you know, I think there's a little bit of disparity between our developer story and our user story. For our developers, we want to show them that we're not really interested in cross-platform ports. We want apps that are specific to our desktop environment and fit in and look great. So that's what users are going to expect down the road. But our user story currently, the kind of users that we have right now, they're coming from mostly, well, they're not really mostly coming from free desktops, actually. Two-thirds are coming from outside. But the users that we have right now are kind of already used to the free desktop landscape of apps, and that they're not very integrated things. So we can't really tell them, hey, there are only four apps, and then they open up a bunch of Software Center, and there are thousands. It's something that I think it's a little bit of marketing speak that we need to get people onto the platform, to get people more interested in, to build better apps. But at the end of the day, it's kind of semantics, really, you know, what counts as an app or not.
So one thing I wanted to ask on this regard is for the last year and a half, my team's been leading a bunch of work for growing the Ubuntu developer platform, right? For the Ubuntu SDK and all the associated pieces. So I know pretty intimately all the different pieces that we need to build an Ubuntu developer platform. And this is not just an SDK, it's application sandboxing. It's a place to upload click packages. It's a full developer website, API docs. There's loads of stuff that's involved in there. And it's been a lot of work for us as a bunch of full-time people working on this. How do you... This is going to sound potentially a bit of a mean question, but it's not intended that way. How do you expect to be able to compete, even just within the Linux world, as a volunteer kind of driven project when there's just so much to do? And secondly, like, how do you differentiate enough to be unique? Because I think the goal there is amazing, to be unique and different, but how do you differentiate and how do you climb that mountain of work?
Just before Daniel answers this, I need to clarify something. Jono, did you just ask someone how they can hope to have a free software project where there are free developers across the world all contributing in their spare time?
No.
What exactly are you asking then, man?
What I'm saying is that, look, we accept in Ubuntu that we're in a position of catching up to, like, it sounds like Elementary and Ubuntu has broadly the same audience in terms of that we're striving for, right? Which is general users. And we are investing, like, we have hundreds of people working for us who are working on this. We know how much of a mountain there is to climb. And I've been very involved in this for the last couple of years. And I'm just saying, like, how, from the perspective of a open source project that doesn't have all of those employees, how do you expect to climb that mountain and differentiate?
Well, I think the secret sauce there is that Ubuntu on the desktop has never really been that good. No offense, Jono.
In what way?
That's a bazinga moment right there. This is solid. I'm sorry. I'm just going to be quiet and smile in the corner for a minute.
In what way is it not very good?
From a user perspective, I think we're providing a desktop that's better than desktop Ubuntu. I see mobile Ubuntu as something that we're not even going to get into right now, and Ubuntu as a mobile-first experience is probably going to be really cool. But on the desktop, right now, Unity 7 and less, Ubuntu is too slow, it's too confusing, it's too inconsistent, it changes all the time, it's been rewritten all the time. It's not a very friendly place for new users. So as far as competing against other free desktops, I don't think it's a huge issue. I think the GNOME team, the Fedora guys, they're doing a killer job as far as user experience on the desktop lately. I'm getting a little more, not really concerned, but, you know, when I see the GNOME team doing things, sometimes I go, wow, you know, do we really need to go there? It looks like they're doing a really good job. But as far as a whole developer program, I think the only people actually doing that in the FOSS landscape are Ubuntu. And that, like you said, is a huge mountain to climb. It's not straightforward at all. It's not all the things that people see. It's all the things people don't see. It's all the web services on the back end. Launchpad has been extremely useful for us. But a Launchpad as a place for developers to submit their applications to be in our app store, I think, as you guys have probably seen, isn't really the best path. It's not able to compete on a level of getting my app into the iOS app store.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, and you know, I'm not interested in you know, debates or arguments between which is better, Ubuntu Elementary. I think, you know, there's good points on both sides, right? What I think what you guys are trying to do here is cool. I think like the design driven like general desktop that everybody can use, I think is an admirable goal. But what I worry is that it's a lot of excitement and kind of movement in a fishbowl that's ultimately never going to grow much bigger than that fishbowl, because the things that are going to hold you back are not quality of design. It's things like a great application developer experience, because you won't be successful unless you have apps, I think is the general perspective that I have. And I think Axe shares as well.
I think Esla, a slightly different way, is it seems like you guys have pretty high aspirations, which is a good thing. But what's your plan to make that sustainable, both financially and otherwise long term? Because it's a kind of a long term goal to do what you guys are trying
right.
to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I don't have any financial numbers to share with you right now, but I definitely don't think it's fair to say it's only possible for a big corporation to build a sustainable ecosystem. Look at Debian. They're very volunteer driven, and they're the biggest out of everyone.
But they're not your market, though. That Debian is not your market. What you said earlier on was that you want to go for general computing users, right? Debian is designed for Linux people.
And more importantly, I think, one of the reasons Debian can grow an ecosystem as large as it has is that they're explicitly not going to turn anyone away on grounds that they want to do things to some extent their own way. Debian is deliberately a very big tent. Elementary, because it's got a strong design focus and it's strongly design led, you don't want people to step outside that. You don't want people to come and say, well, I think my app should work this way. You want them to basically follow the guidelines, right? Which means that you can't use the same pitch that Debian has. And I'd be interested if, when you said, you know, it's perfectly possible for a completely volunteer organization to build a large-scale ecosystem, I'd be interested in an example which shares Elementary's ethos. Because I don't think there's one. I mean, that's not stopping you being the first, but it means you've got to be the first.
Well, look at Wikipedia. They have really strict guidelines. Very strict. I can't even edit my own Wikipedia article.
Now, wait a minute. Wikipedia is a bad example here, because they won't even let Bad Voltage have a good Wikipedia article. So they're,
yeah, we can't
they're
have a page
around.
You're
here.
Not alone. No, you're not alone, man. But I think Axe's point is valid in the fact that I think none of us would question your goals, and I think the goals are truly admirable. I've been a long believer in bringing Linux and open source to the masses, right? But I think what we're really trying to get at is like, how are you going to do it practically? Aside from kind of like aspirations and getting people working on the core bits, because the desktop, frankly, is just one tiny piece of the puzzle, right? Now, I mean, what about business development, app developers, all that kind of stuff? I'm just keen to see what your kind of vision is as the founder of the project.
I'm not really sure what the question you're trying to get at is. Technically, we do it the exact same way that Canonical does it. We just do it without the funding. And with more
right, but what? But I think the funding is critical to the success. Like, you need business development, you need OEM relationships, you need ISV development, you need training, you need certification labs, you need
for
QA and continuous
things.
Integration.
For certain things, I think I'm kind of in the middle here. I think I kind of see what John was saying here, because I'm a big proponent of big companies coming in, putting funding behind open source software and pushing open source software that much further. But then again, there's some amazing projects that are completely volunteer driven that have done some amazing things over the years. Debian's a great example. I mean, a lot of the work that goes into Debian is all volunteer driven, and that makes it possible for Ubuntu to exist. Otherwise, Ubuntu would not even exist today.
Totally.
So when I look at, I'm not too worried about that. I don't really see how Daniel can answer that question. Like, we've kind of asked it a couple of different ways. What I kind of almost see is they've kind of already accomplished some of that goal. They've created the desktop that they like. They're continuing to build the desktop that they like, and the people that like it are using it. And Daniel, you said just a few minutes ago that 2/3 of the people grabbing it are not on a free or open source platform.
That's correct. As far as the stats that we have, 2/3 of the downloads are coming from Windows and Mac users, not Linux users.
Which one's more prevalent? Is it more Windows or more Mac? I'm curious. More Windows. And roughly how many downloads have you guys hit for the current version?
We're over 1 million right now. So we're at 1,100,000 something.
So you guys...
Cool.
Just to be clear, just so that maybe this will help kind of answer what John was getting to. You guys have created your own desktop that's designed in your own image the way you want it with a volunteer organization. You're predominantly attracting at basically 2/3 rate non-Linux users over to Linux, and you've crossed the million download mark. It kind of seems like, I don't know, I feel like you guys are accomplishing already what you guys are setting out to accomplish. The question now is, are you looking to scale up to Canonical style where you have support contracts and training and certification, or are you happy where you're at and possibly just growing a little? I mean, I guess that seems to be more of the question.
I don't think we have the same kind of focus that Canonical has as far as the enterprise or cloud or corporate enterprise cloud or servers or anything like that. I don't think any of that is in our goals. We're strictly focused on consumers, desktop users. So as far as monetary expansion, the thing that we're going to be looking to is providing content and services in the form of cloud services or sales of music, books, movies, that kind of thing. Yeah. I think that would be the opportunity for monetization for us.
Hey, you guys should build some sort of a cloud storage system. I hear there's a big market for that nowadays coming from a Linux company.
I think the thing that I'm trying to get at is, I think the fact that that maybe you guys are the first open source project that really crosses that chasm, I think that's absolutely possible. Like, I don't think the fact that we can't think of a software example that's existed beforehand is a reason not to pursue those goals. I think they're totally admirable goals. I guess what I was wanting to get an answer out of is specific things to try and get over that chasm. Because I think the thing that worries me is, while I think the project is admirable, I worry that the things that define success, that help to get to that mass market, are things that are typically unavailable to most open source projects. It is ISV relationships and OEM relationships and stuff like that. And I think that's why I was just wondering if you've got any plans afoot to kind of get around those issues, because that would be my worry, is that you could do make the best desktop in the world, make the best software in the world as you go for that market. But if you're limited because you don't have those business development functions, that then it just doesn't get you over the chasm. I guess that's the thing I was edging towards. But it sounds like you guys are figuring that stuff out as you go along. Is that correct, Daniel?
It's more like we try not to make promises. We have lots of plans and lots of ideas, but the moment we start saying we're going to build that, we're going to do this, and then we don't, people lose confidence in us and in our brand.
So maybe just to wrap up then, why don't we ask you probably the most important question, which is, like, where do you see what's coming in the next year? Well, I know you've got big ideas and promise, and you don't make too many promises, but what would you like to share with us in terms of what elementary users and non-elementary users can expect to see in the next year or so?
Well, the next version of Elementary, codename ISIS, is strongly under development right now. I'm really proud that this release seems to have mostly been focused around fixing outstanding issues. We've re-architected quite a few apps. We've done a lot of cleanup, a lot of code style fixes, basically taking the foundation that we have and doubling up on its strength. So what you see in ISIS is the amazing speed of Luna is surpassed. System resources are still just as good, if not better. Things are not going to go down as much. People have said that it's already stable, but we've found a lot of crashes and fix them. There are tons of bugs, interaction issues that are being ironed out. As far as on the feature side, something that we have kind of focused on a little bit is trying to work in a little bit of online integration. So something that's in there right now is online account support. We've actually built out in the style of Ubuntu online accounts, a Glib compatible version instead of a Qt-based version. So So it should interact with any app that's already using the Ubuntu online accounts, which is great.
Cool.
But it will be completely integrated with our desktop. So that's the main thing we're focusing right now is ironing out any issues that we had before so we can have an even faster, more stable release and eking in a little bit of online integration.
Cool. And for those people who've been living in a cave, where can they find more information about Elementary? What's the most pertinent website, social media kind of resources you want to point people towards?
The best website is always our homepage. It's elementaryos.org. If you want to see what's going on with development or just get involved in the community, you could search for Elementary on Google+. We're pretty active there.
Awesome. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate you taking the tough questions and all the best for the future.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, man.
And now on to one of my favorite segments in the show, the community and look back segment. And during this kind of segment last show, I asked for a little bit of feedback for those of you who have used OwnCloud or something similar to OwnCloud. And I was hoping just to get a response or two, to be honest. And the number of responses we got was actually quite impressive, I think. And they did vary a little bit, but it seems like most people like OwnCloud more than Act does.
Which is not a very high bar to clear, to be
no, that's not right.
And it was interesting that what I thought most people would use OwnCloud for, it turns out they're not really using it for the file syncing. Most people were not using it as a Dropbox replacement. They were using it for something else. But either way, we really do appreciate the feedback, and anytime you get to prove any of us wrong, I'm sure that's enjoyable for all of you. So head to community.badvoltage.org if there's anything you think we said in this show that you think you can correct us on.
Yeah,
we love it.
Something else that's come about through discussion on the forums has been building mobile apps for Bad Voltage. And we've got quite a few on the go at the moment. There's one being made by El Dude for iOS. There's one being made by Joe for Android. There's one being made by Show Elk for Sailfish, no less. And I built this Touch one a while back. And it's cool, right? I like the idea that, that we've got this kind of presence in various different app stores and things. So if you're the one guy in the world who can build a Tizen app or whatever, you want to build a BlackBerry app or something, get stuck in. Or if you want to build alternatives for any of those platforms, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to hang out and work with Joe on the Android app or you want to build your own Android app, which you think is better, show up to community.badvoltage.org and let us know what you think.
Yeah, we're going to hear from that one Tizen developer, by the way. He's going to be pissed.
Maybe we need an elementary app, you know, from our discussions on this show, you know? That'd be cool.
Yeah, written in Vala.
In Vala, no less. So, I mean, that we've always wanted Bad Voltage to be very much of a community. So people building apps or building other software or organizing gaming, whatever it might be.
Or just participating in the forums in general.
Yeah, just be part of what we're doing. Like, come and hang out. We've got a real nice community forum in here. So, speaking of which, I want to say a big thank you on behalf of the team. Again, this is not prompted by to A2 Hosting, who have been supporting us by providing hosting for the forum. Now, just to paint a little bit of a backstory here, we originally, as some of you will remember, we threw up community.badvoltage on Azure, and then it pretty quickly outstretched Azure. So we went to A2 Hosting, and I have a bunch of machines with them, and asked them if they'd be able to give us some free hosting for the show. And they said yes, with absolutely zero kind of, you know, requirements. They didn't say you need to have an ad on every show and things like that. So I just wanted to really emphasize that they're an awesome company, and we're saying this out of love for them, not because they're telling us to, which makes them even more awesome. So thank you, A2 Hosting.
And we should talk about similar people who host the actual show downloads themselves, which is Bytemark.
Yeah,
Bytemark are long-term friends of this show and many previous shows, starring your humble correspondent and Jonathan Bacon, among other people.
Humble correspondent, my foot, dude.
This not very humble correspondent, to be clear.
Humble.
But Bytemark are brilliant. They support a whole load of open source stuff.
I don't know that either of those words describes you.
Okay. I'm corresponding. Here I am. But yes, I want to say thank you, Bytemark. on iTunes.
Let's talk about IRC now. I don't want to talk about whatever you're talking about anymore because you're talking too much. I want to talk about IRC. I want to talk specifically.
You are criticizing someone for talking too much, Lundy.
Yeah, really, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I am not beholden to any sort of fact here. So the bad voltage channel discovered that on IRC, hashtag bad voltage, it's got a friggin' bot, and it was made by someone named Kano. Little apostrophe thingy. I don't know how to say that name, but it's a totally awesome name, and it's being deployed by some guy named Neuro over in the IRC chat room, which is totally rad. And that is where all the cool kids are hanging out. And by all the cool kids, I mean like 35 cool kids. There's like 35 cool kids hanging out in there right now, but they're 35 cool. of the coolest kids ever.
You can if you don't really know how IRC works, you can go to badvoltage.org/IRC and there's quite an easy way of connecting. But and Kano is actually a long-time Lug Radio listener
Who gave
one of the funniest talks I've ever seen in my life called Baguette on Snails, which is he created because he's French, right? So he created basically his own tool called Baguette on Snails, which is a ripoff of Ruby on Rails. It was brilliant. Little progress bar was a little snail moving forward. So. Yeah, so anyway, just got to get that little pimp out in for him. Anything else? Are we missing anything else out? Are we
good? I don't think so.
I'm good.
We've seen like tons of great discussion on the forum.
I don't know. Anything else, humble correspondent?
No. No, that's about the size of it. I think that covers the highlights of what we've seen going on. But, you know, off to community.badvoltage.org and prove us wrong. Do more stuff. So once again on Bad Voltage, we spend some time talking about personal electronics of ours that have seen us naked. I don't know whether this is kind of a theme now that we
this is
we
absolutely do. A theme.
Whether that can be our unique selling point among other radio shows.
I'm not going to lie, dude. I made sure I put that in there just because of your review.
Excellent.
So, you know.
So, Jono, which of your personal electronics have seen you naked?
I'd rather not answer that question, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, I'm not sure I want to know the answer to that question.
pretty much all of my electronics have seen me naked.
Especially that guitar case in the background.
I'm actually wearing nothing but the pedal right now.
Oh, my.
Where are you wearing it?
I'm just going to leave that to your imagination.
And tomorrow it was announced that Pebble have gone out of business. Before we wrap up, I just want to remind our good listeners that we are going to have a listening party, Bad Voltage Listening Party. This is where we get together and basically we stream the latest episode of the show, which is going to be this one. And then people can listen to it together and have a conversation in our chat channel. It's always a lot of fun. We've just started doing it really just for the last episode. So if you get along to badvoltage.org/party, on the 8th, it's going to be Thursday the 8th of May, which should be today if you're listening to the day the show comes out. Get over there at 6 p.m. UTC, which is, hang on, let me click.
You don't need to do the conversion every single show. People can take UTC and turn it into their local time.
No one knows what UTC
they can't.
Is.
I'm unable to do Pacific, that myself.
11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern.
So you think there's one listener in like Zimbabwe right now who's not going to be able to figure out what time it's on?
Critically importantly, 7 p.m. in the UK, right?
Whatever.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, and if you go to the website, badvoltage.org/party, there's a click on the link, you'll be able to find all the conversions. So, yeah, go and check it out. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, go to community.badvoltage.org where you can hang out with the forum. And I think that's about it. Anything else?
Yeah, well, I'm inclined to think the next time we do a show, it shouldn't all just be about Brian's stuff.
Yeah, let's not.
Well, we're trying to catch him up on content since he misses so many shows. So it's only.
No! This is an important point, gentlemen.
Yes,
it is. Right? We have to pick a forfeit avatar for Jono for the forums for the next 2 weeks because we had to reschedule the recording of the show on his account.
Good catch, because we almost forgot right there.
We're recording this on Monday, by the way, people. So we normally record on a Wednesday. So thanks for reminding us about that.
Yeah. So that, what should we pick, chaps?
Oh, I should. I feel like you guys should pick ahead of time.
I picked last time and I was really satisfied with it. I feel like you guys should get to pick how to humiliate Jono this time.
Jeremy, go.
I'm tempted to say the Elementary logo.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
That's pretty good, yeah. I like the elementary logo idea.
John, or just a picture of Daniel Foray. The elementary logo on the we could you can't have a picture of Daniel Foray. That's perilously close to actual misrepresentation at that point.
In a heart or something.
Foray's got way more hair for a start. So
that's true. This is true, actually.
Yeah. So the elementary OS logo, please, Jono.
That's going to be my avatar.
That's your avatar for the next 2 weeks.
When do I have to start doing that?
When the show is released.
Yes.
Yeah, not on Thursday. Good.
Because people are going to be wondering, like, in the 4 days building up to the show, what the hell my avatar's changed to. All right. Nope. Fine. All right. So with that bombshell, we'll wrap it up. See you in a few weeks, people.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.